Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans and Jeff Shade, a show that simplifies the complexities of investments, taxes, retirement, and more so you can discover how to better sustain yourself and your wealth for years to come. Brian is a CPA with 30 years experience and a financial advisor, which brings a unique perspective to the financial world. This show is brought to you by Madrona Financial and CPAs, home of the Rooted Wealth Plan. Want a retirement plan designed to last 30 plus years? Go to MadronaFinancial.com and click Get Started to see what the Rooted Wealth Plan can do for you. And now, here are your hosts, Brian Evans and Jeff Shade.
Thank you so much. Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans, the show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to help sustain yourself and your wealth for 30 plus years. On today's show, we're going to be discussing 8 things to know about annuities before you buy and income sources the IRS does not tax. My name's Jeff Shade, and as always, I'm just here to ask the questions, but the words of wisdom and solid advice come from Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. Hey, Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jeff.
Always glad to hear that, Brian. And as always, I hope our listeners are doing well today, too. We've got another information-packed show. Brian, annuities continue to become more popular within the retirement planning space, yet, as always, so many people seem to hate annuities. What's your opinion on annuities?
Well, I like to use my tool analogy there. And I don't love them and I don't hate them. They're like a tool, and I'm going to assign the hammer to the annuity. And so if I have a toolbox, I can have many different tools in it. I probably want a hammer in there because those hammers are great for driving nails into boards. They're terrible for cutting a straight edge in a board. So if I want a straight edge, I want a saw in there. Hammers are not good for putting screws into a board. So you can try and do that, but you're going to mess it up.
Right.
It's not a nail, it's a screw. So you need a screwdriver in your toolbox. So I prefer to have a toolbox with lots of different tools in it. No tool is good or bad. They are good or bad for a particular job, though. And so the problem, and what I'm going to talk about, and I'm the only radio station I think probably you'll ever listen to, business show out there,
yeah,
that's going to talk about annuities and actually talk about the detriments too. What are the downsides? Because I've spent a lot of time in this industry and I've heard a lot of people talk about annuities. And if that person who's talking sells them, all I hear is the good stuff. All I hear is about how good that hammer can drive a nail. And I never hear about how it's not good for the other jobs, and you don't need it for certain jobs. And so, you think about a tool shop. Have you ever been to a tool shop where all they sold were hammers? You have 10 aisles. Where are the saws? We don't have any, sir. Screwdrivers? Nope. We got hammers. Which aisle are they on? All 10.
All of them.
It's like, okay, that's ridiculous. You've never been to a tool shop that only sells hammers. Yet, there are thousands of financial advisors that only sell annuities. So in my analogy, they only sell hammers. And so what is that person going to tell you about a hammer? Oh, they're awesome. Hammer's the best thing ever. It's all you need. You can do any job with a hammer. I'm like, is that true? Yep. Take my word on it. I'm a fiduciary. I'm required to act in your best interest, and a hammer is the only tool you'll ever need for any job you ever have. Again, that sounds ridiculous, Brian, but isn't that what we're hearing when we hear annuities, all you need? That's the only tool you need in your financial toolbox. Just buy annuities. Everything's solved. They're perfect. They're the perfect investment. They have no downside. We won't even go there. It's all upside, upside, upside. And I'm here to debunk that today. So if you have an annuity, you've heard about annuities, you're thinking about an annuity, please stay tuned in because we're going to talk about annuities, but we're going to give you the straight scoop. Yes, I sell annuities also. But also can put people into anything else too. We need to know if it's appropriate for the job that we have at hand. For example, I met 2 weeks ago with a couple and they came in and their concern was cash flow. And I'm thinking, okay, initially we think, all right, annuities. Well, annuity is the definition of annuity is a recurring cash flow, monthly check essentially. And so immediately, well, that may be a possibility normally because, you think about the 5 things investments can do. They can grow, they can be secure, they can provide cash flow, tax savings, or be liquid. And so they came in asking for cash flow. They wanted that analyzed. And a surprising thing came out of my mouth when they said, well, we heard about annuities. Is that something we should have? I said, absolutely not. And why is that, Brian? Didn't you just say annuities can provide cash flow? Well, yeah. But in this case, this couple owned real estate and they had some mortgages on it. It was investment real estate. They had about $5 million in the market and another $13 million net equity in their real estate, literally worth $18 million. And they were 60 years old and didn't spend a lot of money. So I'm looking at that and go, okay, security is a reason you buy annuities. They didn't need security. They crossed that bridge a long time ago, many, many millions of dollars of net worth ago, that they really didn't need security in their portfolio. And it was simple to adjust their cash flow. They had a bunch of cash on the sidelines. They had some high interest loans. They were selling a property. We took the money from that property and paid off all their high interest loans, which dramatically increased their cash flow, solved the problem. We didn't need to do anything else with their portfolio. And we didn't need to talk about annuities because their net worth was so high. We didn't need it and we could solve it in different ways. Conversely, I met another couple and they basically can't sleep at night watching the market. They're so stressed out. They're so worried about everything that's going on in the world. They're stressed out about everything. They just want a comfortable retirement and they don't want to have to think about it. And they had a couple small pensions. They had Social Security. They had some money, but they were just absolutely nervous about the market. They don't have kids. They didn't have any legacy asset needs or anything like that. Annuity was a perfect solution for them. They just wanted to rely on monthly checks for as long as they lived. And they knew exactly what their budget was. We were able to shore up the difference with the annuity, and it was a perfect solution for them. Now, the interesting thing is, I think about these two examples, these couples were both the exact same age. And so it's not even an age thing here. It was where they're at with the rest of their portfolio, who they are as people, and is it a fit? And sometimes it is, and sometimes it is not.
Brian, just like tools, there are a lot of different types of tools. Are there different types of annuities?
Yeah, absolutely different types of annuities. I'll break them down into a couple of the basic areas. There's something called a fixed annuity, a fixed indexed annuity, and a variable annuity. And just 40,000-foot view, the fixed annuity is akin to a CD. That's where the insurance company promises you a certain amount of interest that they cannot change for a certain period of time. So it might be 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. We're going to pay you X. Pretty simple stuff. I don't need to spend an hour talking about fixed annuities. They resemble CDs. They're just issued by insurance companies instead of banks, and they're usually longer than a CD is, and they'll lock in that rate for a longer period of time. So sometimes that is appropriate for a client that just wants to park money in a certain place and get a reasonable interest rate like they are right now. There's something called a fixed indexed annuity. So indexed annuities basically take a lot of the risk out of investing. They usually have a floor of zero. So if we have a bad market or the index that you're in goes down, you don't take a loss. You just get a zero that year. They have upside. Sometimes they have caps. Sometimes they call them spreads. They'll give you a percentage of the index that they're tracking on the upside, often with a ceiling on that. So you have a floor and a ceiling with these very often. Another nuance of those is that some of them are designed to pay you lifetime cash flow, guaranteed lifetime cash flows. So you can turn them on and you'll get monthly checks. Your monthly checks are part earnings and part principal. It's kind of like having a pension in a way. You're getting monthly checks for life. Over time, though, the surrender value of that annuity eventually goes to zero if you live long enough. And the final one is a variable annuity. And those annuities, we don't sell them. They're in the market. So you have market returns generally with some adjustments. They usually have pretty high fees. They can lose money in a given year. There are some guarantees in them, depending on the one you're in. But we always take the position that if you want to be in the stock market, let's not go through an insurance company as a filter to get to the market. Let's just go right to the market and not pay the insurance company fees. So generally, if we need security or different kinds of things, we can get them out of the fixed annuity space or fixed indexed annuity space. So those are the fixed indexed, and variable annuities. The two objectives can be a safe accumulation of earnings or lifetime cash flow.
Brian, when I hear these radio shows about annuities, often the discussion goes to this bonus that you'll get. Hey, you're going to get a 30% bonus. It seems too good to be true. Is that true that you're going to get a bonus, a cash bonus that you can actually spend?
Wow, yeah, seems too good to be true can absolutely be the truth there. You know, sometimes I'll differentiate. There are things called cash bonuses where the annuity company will give you X% as a bonus. if you hold the annuity for the length of the annuity. So for instance, I just saw one that came out and it was double digits, and I'm like, okay, they're giving a bonus. It's real money in this case if you hold that annuity for 10 years. So what I did is I just, in my head, I said, all right, they're guaranteeing, I'll just throw out a number, I'm making this one up, 10% to round it off. Let's say you got a 10% bonus. You go, oh, great. I gave them 100 grand, they're going to give me 10 grand, right? I'm like, well, no. If you hold that annuity the full 10 years, they'll give you 10 grand. That's 1% a year. So in my head, I'm factoring in, okay, whatever index they're offering, add 1% a year to that, because I got to hold this 10 years to get that bonus. So just understand that that's what they're giving you. 10% up front sounds great, but you know, you may have to hold it for a while. So you divide it by the number of years you got to hold it. Conversely, I hear all the time about these other annuities that are giving massive bonuses. And I heard this one, I don't know which company was offering it, but it was a 30% bonus. And the salesman on the air was talking about this 30% bonus, how awesome this is, 30%, 30%. Where can you get that? Well, you can't. And so when you actually get the check in the mail from the annuity company, picture this, you get two checks. One's in U.S. currency, you know, it's a check that you can cash at the bank. And the other one is in an orange-colored and a pink-colored bill. And you look at them close and you go, well, this is Monopoly money. I can't spend this.
Yeah.
Well, that's essentially what they're talking about. They're talking about a computational figure. You can't spend it. What do you mean I can't spend it? You just told me I just signed up for this annuity that gave me a bonus of 30%. Like, no, that's not money. That is a figure they use to compute your lifetime cash flow. They can multiply that figure. We'll call it A. A times B equals C. So we're talking about A, and we're going, A is awesome. A is 30% more. It's awesome. A is the best thing ever. And it's like, well, I'm concerned about C. C is how much I can spend. That's the dollars I get in my bank account. What are you multiplying A times to get me how much I'm actually going to get, which is C in this case? We're multiplying it by B. Well, tell me about B. Oh, I don't talk about B. Well, so what the insurance company can do is they can jack up the thing that they're going to try and sell you on, A, the 30% bonus, and then lower what they're multiplying it by, which is B, to get you in the same place in the end, the check that you're going to put in your bank account. So that 30% bonus, to me, if they didn't adjust what they're multiplying it by, I'd say, okay, well, that will turn into money. But because they can adjust what they're multiplying it by, which is what you're going to receive in actual dollars, U.S. dollars in your bank account, that's what, really what we're talking about, that bonus, it's not real. It's just a sales ploy. It's a manipulation tool to get you to lower your guard to buy this product when in reality, you could go to someone else that doesn't have that and probably get the same cash flow in the end. So was it really a bonus? Not if that what they're multiplying it by isn't fixed.
So it sounds like many times that annuities can be misunderstood or that there's actually some deception that goes on here. Sort of a bait and switch.
Oh, absolutely. I hear this all the time. In fact, with that bonus annuity, that wasn't enough. They went on to say a guaranteed return, 8% guaranteed return. I was like, okay, so is that 8% of green money or some of that pink and yellow money you talked about? Well, yeah, it's a little bit of both. Because the 8% is just how much the cash flow can go up if you don't take 12 checks. Like, oh, so I've got to give up money back to the insurer. I basically give up money that I could have otherwise had in order to get the 8%. Well, it sounds like I'm buying my own 8%. That doesn't sound like earnings to me. If you got to buy your own earnings with 12 checks you've foregone, is that really earnings? Well, of course it's not. Are you really earning 8% then? Well, of course you're not. Maybe you're earning half of that or even less. And so half the money that came in your check that month was green and half was that pink Monopoly kind of stuff. So it's not real money. So 8% guaranteed return, I think of it, oh, okay, I give you $1 million, you give me 80 grand a year guaranteed, right? Well, no, sorry, sir. That's not actually true. But that's what you told me. Plus, you told me I was going to get a $300,000 bonus on top of that. Was that true? Well, no, that's a lie. I mean, well, that's not exactly accurate either. So be very careful when you're listening to somebody who's selling you a product and they're giving you these attributes and you're going, does that make sense? Does it make sense, honestly, that an insurance company is out there going, we're so good with money. We can give away 30%. and promise 8% after all of our fees and commissions and our expenses and our marketing costs. We make so much money that we will give the farm away to anybody who wants it. I was like, does that make sense to anybody? I mean, sure, we all want to hear that. Boy, that sounds great. 30%, 8% a year guaranteed. Who wouldn't sign up for that? I'd be the biggest financial advisor in the world if that were the real thing. It's not the real thing. And so be very, very careful when you're getting promised things that you have to be working with somebody that understands the product and is willing to tell you the detriments and the truth about that product.
Brian, I'm having a little problem understanding when annuities are actually appropriate for someone. Can you give me a hand with that one?
Oh, sure. And sometimes they can be very appropriate. So I gave the example earlier of my client that was trying to solve for cash flow, and they had plenty of opportunities within their investment real estate holdings to make that happen. But a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people have stock market investments, stocks and bonds. And they remembered a couple of years ago, and the markets were down, bonds and stocks. They remember the crash, the 9/11.com, 2008, COVID. And they said, you know, I've heard about this thing called sequence of return risk, and I'm really concerned because all of my money's in my 401k and all of that's in stocks and bonds. And I've seen them both go very poorly at different points in my life. Can I rely on my retirement just having that? And well, that's a great question. So very often we will say, well, no, we need to use annuities for the tool that they are to provide security and guaranteed lifetime cash flow, one or the other or both, for a portion of your portfolio to make sure that if we have bad markets, which we probably will at some point in our life, if we live long enough, we're going to see bad markets, that we have some protections built into our retirement plan so we don't have to go back to work someday after we retired. So they can be a very appropriate tool in certain circumstances. And so I don't want to just scare people away from annuities. They can be a great tool in the right circumstance. And so we certainly place a lot of them with people. We don't place them with everybody. They're not the right tool for every job, obviously, but they can be a very good tool if you're looking for security and cash flow.
Brian, before we continue, I want to take here just a moment to remind our listeners how they can have a conversation with you to ask their questions about annuities. If you're wondering, based on our conversation today, whether or not an annuity is right for you, if you don't understand the different permutations of annuities, you want to get the straight answers, and you're looking for some independent research to see if this annuity really can do the things for you that you want it to do, I've got a solution for you. And that's to call Madrona Financial for your no-cost and your no-obligation Madrona analysis. That number to call, phone lines are open right now, 833-673-7373. You must have at least $500,000 of investable assets to qualify. And as a bonus, if you do, we'll send you out a copy of Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Remember, it's not going to cost you a dime to have this conversation about annuities with an advisor there at Madrona Financial. As I said, even though it is the weekend right now, you can still make that call, 833-673-7373. And remember, this is a conversational analysis. It's a chance for you to ask your questions. No one's going to sell you an annuity. We're simply going to have a conversation with you to see whether or not an annuity could be right for you. So if you're wondering about that, 833-673-7373 is the number to call, and you can do it right now. Once again, 833-673-7373. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, I've heard that some people are using annuities to pay for long-term care. How is that possible?
Yeah, certain annuities offer what's called riders. And so for a fee, generally, you pay an extra fee every year, you can have an additional benefit. It's like anywhere you go. If you want access to certain things, you pay a fee as your entrance fee. And whether you use it or not, you pay that fee. And so a lot of people that are selling annuities might say, hey, not only will I solve all your problems, I'll even take care of your long-term care. Well, there's a problem with that. Annuities are not long-term care insurance. They may have a rider that talks about long-term care as an accelerated death benefit. So in this case, what we're thinking about is, because some people think, and I've talked to people like this, oh, well, I don't have to worry about long-term care. I have it as a rider on my annuity. And well, how much do you pay for that annuity? Well, $100,000. So my long-term care is fine. I'm like, oh gosh, no, you're not fine. Unless you can find a long-term care facility for, you know, $1,000 a month someday, you're not fine, because it's not going to be adequate. It's not built for that. It's just an acceleration of benefits. It's not a multiplication of benefits. And so long-term care insurance typically is a multiplication. You give them a particular amount of money, let's say an asset-based long-term care plan, you give them a particular amount of money, you can have a multiplication of that if you need it for care potentially someday. Annuities are not built that way. They're not designed that way. They can't be. An insurance company cannot stay in business if they're giving away, you know, those bonuses I talked about, those high guaranteed returns. Oh, on top of that, well, I'll cover all your long-term care, and I'll even stop by and bring you groceries. And, you know, no, it's, they can only do so much. And so just be careful. Understand, again, we're talking about trusting the people you're working with. Understand what is the limitation of that acceleration of benefits of long-term care. It may be a nice little feature and that you want, that's fine, but it's probably oversold as the end-all, be-all, we're going to take care of your long-term care. It's not really designed to do that in the end. You really need proper long-term care insurance that's actually designed for long-term care if you want that as part of your retirement planning.
Brian, I've also heard that annuities could possibly be used as a bond alternative. Is that really a thing?
Yeah, I would say that is a thing because certainly for decades we've heard, oh, you got to have stocks and bonds, and they don't mention annuities, they don't mention real estate. And it's like, well, I think there's a great situation for stocks and bonds and annuities and real estate and alternative investments and credit funds and structured notes and buffered ETFs, and, you know, I can go on and on. There's a lot of different asset classes that could be part of a well-balanced, diversified portfolio. Now, over-reliance on bonds has been a problem for people when interest rates started creeping up. They were losing money on their bond funds, and they thought that was safe. They thought the bond part of their portfolio was the safe part. So they always tell you, they tell you, oh, well, 60-40 stocks and bonds. Stocks are your risk asset, bonds are your secure asset. Well, bonds are not secure unless you hold them to maturity and you get paid off at the end. Most people don't hold bonds to maturity. They lose money when interest rates go up. And so when interest rates went up, people lost money in their bond portfolios and going, huh, that's not what I intended this to do. I wanted this to be the secure part of my portfolio. Well, can I replace those bonds with fixed index annuity or fixed annuity and have security? Absolutely, I can. And so very often we would use annuities as a bond substitute for that portion of your portfolio you want designed for security that can't lose money in a bad market. And so that absolutely can be something we do with annuities is use them as a bond substitute in a portfolio.
Brian, let's talk about annuity payouts. And by that, I mean single life, joint life, period certain, men versus women. Can you expand on that?
Well, yeah, and insurance companies are doing the math. I mean, the insurance companies are good at product sales, product design, and they have a lot of actuaries, you know, accountants essentially. And so when it comes to payouts, it's like a pension decision. You can do a single life. So if you're married and you pass away, the payments stop. You can do a joint life so that they go second to die. If you do a second to die, your payout goes down. You get less money every month. Annuity for a woman doesn't pay as much as annuity for a man because the annuity companies have done their actuarial analysis and said men don't live as long as women. So we take less of a risk with a man so we can pay them more than we can the woman. So, you know, they're just doing their risk analysis and computations and so forth. And so, gosh, you can do an annuity for a period certain where if you buy an annuity, I absolutely, even if I die, it's a single life annuity. Even if I die, somebody gets payments for, say, up to 10 years. And if you buy an annuity and you die after 1 year and you bought one of these, someone gets 10 years of payments and maybe your estate essentially gets 60 cents back on the dollar of what you put into it. So they guarantee a certain amount of a payout on that. But the rest goes back to the insurance company. With most of these lifetime payouts, if you both die prematurely and you pick second to die, there is money to go to your heirs. So there's a lot of analysis. I can't get into all the ramifications and combinations and permutations on the air today, but just understand there are a lot of decisions to be made when it comes to annuities. So make sure that if you have one, that you understand it or come see us to get some help with that.
Brian, based on our conversation today, I'm willing to bet that our listeners have some questions about annuities. So if that is you, you're not sure whether an annuity is right for you. You've got questions about the different variations of annuities. You've got questions about bonuses, whether or not they are real. You're looking for an independent analysis to see whether or not an annuity is right for you. You're in the right place. Call 833 833- 833-673-7373 right now and request your Madrona analysis, which will include annuities. Now, there's no cost and there is no obligation whatsoever for this call. It's just some basic information will be taken from you, and you'll get a call back in the next business day or so to set up a conversation to talk about annuities and whether or not they're right for your portfolio. Once again, 833-673-7373. You must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify, and if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Once again, 833-673-7373. Phone lines are open right now. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be discussing income sources the IRS does not tax. Stay tuned.
Do you ever worry if your CPA and financial advisor are on the same page? You won't have to if you call Madrona Financial and CPAs at 844-MADRONA or go to madronafinancial.com. Now back to more of Growing Your Wealth.
We so much appreciate you joining us every week for Growing Your Wealth. I'm Jeff Shade alongside Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. And in just a moment, Brian and I are going to be discussing income strategies the IRS does not tax. But first, we want to invite Dr. Richard Hemmer, one of the partners here at Madrona, to share a few non-financial tips on how to emotionally and mentally prepare for retirement. Richard?
Hey, thank you, Jeff. Retirement is not just leaving your job. It's embarking on a whole new life phase. Researchers have found that there are 5 key stages one goes through in this transition. The first stage is pre-retirement planning. This step is crucial, and it involves envisioning and preparing for retirement years ahead. As the saying goes, failing to plan is planning to fail. Taking years to thoughtfully map out your retirement goals, your identity, and purpose in the retirement years can mean the difference between a wealthy or a frustrating experience. And yes, it can be years. As a reminder, we define wealth as having enough love, friendships, time, awareness, knowledge, and of course the applied knowledge, wisdom, and eventually money. The second stage is full retirement itself. This is the peak where one can finally experience true wealth, having enough time and relationships and hobbies and love and money. However, reaching this dream state requires effective pre-retirement preparation, which statistically many fail to do. However, this so-called dream state is not correlated to your bank account, meaning the greater the balance, the greater the wealth. It doesn't work that way. In fact, recent studies have shown that when people focus all of their energy on accumulation, they miss the train stop called wealth and continue traveling down the road of becoming the richest person in the graveyard. Unfortunately, the third stage of disenchantment often follows for the underprepared. Unmet expectations, a lack of identity and purpose lead to disappointment, emptiness, loneliness, and the ever-looming mental health issues. Proper planning in pre-retirement stage is key to avoiding this disillusionment. The fourth stage is reorientation, so resetting expectations and reevaluating goals. Those at this stage must recognize that trying the same unfulfilling approaches will only accelerate aging. Remember, don't try harder, try different. The fourth stage is the redo of the first stage. Odds are, if you don't make some changes in your approach, you'll repeat the mistakes and find yourself on the merry-go-round of failing health, both physical and mental, not to mention the increased potential for social isolation when guilt-leveraging loved ones for more visits becomes your MO. Finally, the fifth stage is reconciliation and stability. This is a sort of retake on the full retirement, where one can restore their sense of purpose through applying lessons from the pre-retirement preparation stage. But that only works if you plan and prepare properly. My core message is that retirement is not a withdrawal from life, but a grand opening to your best self-exhibit. Just as previous life milestones like starting school or a career require effort, so too does retiring successfully. It demands meticulous planning. A subtle warning to DIY experts or accumulation junkies that are solely concerned with rates of return and account balances: money alone does not equate to a wealthy retirement. In fact, Focusing solely on finances while neglecting relationships and personal growth can undermine happiness. Retirement or pre-retirement is the perfect time to develop a new toolkit of emotional intelligence and communication skills for this bonus phase of life. I invite you to join me in a new podcast adventure called How Not to Retire, a psychological approach to a healthy and wealthy retirement, where the time and energy are spent on the accumulation of wealth. Money is not the focus. That's Brian's cup of tea. To listen to the podcast, go to hownottoretire.com. That's hownottoretire.com. And subscribe to the podcast and receive a complimentary ebook of the process. You can also sign up for Brian's weekly newsletter. And if you're so inclined, you can meet with an advisor and discover for yourself how money and wealth are combined into a singular system called retirement planning or the Madrono Wealth Process. That's hownottoretire.com. Remember, don't try harder, try different. Until next time, may your habits harmonize with your purpose, leading to a life filled with happiness, joy, and well-being.
Thanks, Richard. And for our listeners, you can subscribe to Richard's podcast by going to hownottoretire.com. Brian, let's dive into our last segment today, income sources the IRS does not tax. I'll admit to you, the only one I can think of is the Roth IRA. What else is out there?
Well, before we get into that, taxes is a huge topic. Obviously, our firm is also a CPA firm. I've been a CPA for, this is my 40th year, Jeff, I think, being a CPA. So hard to believe. I was eight, though.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Yeah, I'm not very old.
Prodigy.
No.
Yeah.
I'm teasing there. I'm not Doogie Howser of the CPA world. But, you know, our CPA firm does a lot of taxes. Obviously, we have approximately 20 people just in our CPA firm alone. And so, you know, when you start getting into the tax topic, we are obviously licensed to give tax advice, and we do tax planning, authoritative tax research, all that kind of thing, not just opinions on taxes. I can get an opinion from anywhere. I get one from, you know, what's your opinion on my tax situation to the garbage man, the contractor at my house, my landscaper, but I'd rather go to a CPA and get that anyway. But, you know, and then you start talking about taxes and you peel back the onion a little bit. It's like people think of tax planning as getting out of taxes. But then we have these conversations about, you know, certain things are tax deductible or not, tax free, tax deferred, tax minimization, tax exempt. These are all different things. They're having to do with taxes, but they're very different outcomes. And so trying to understand the nuances of designing a, let's say, a retirement plan around that is not something everybody should attempt on their own, is what I would say. Now, some people have a very simple tax situation. I understand that. But we tend to work with people with more complex situations that require our level of expertise. And so when I'm doing tax planning, I just did a podcast yesterday and I was asked about that. You know, it's tax season. You doing a lot of tax planning? I said, well, someone's come to me during tax season to do tax planning. That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
We're about 3 months too late on that. Mm-hmm. We have to do it in advance. You can't do tax planning in arrears. And so that's a very important thing. And tax planning is not about how do I get out of taxes this year. Tax planning is a multi-year process. So we start with a financial plan. I need to see what your situation looks like. I need to understand your gifting goals, your legacy goals, your income attributes of your portfolio, the valuation of it, understanding all of that. Then we can start doing tax planning, again, which is a multi-year process. It's not the goal is not to get out of paying taxes. We want to pay taxes. That means we're making money. But we want to pay it at the least amount that we are required to pay through proper planning. And whether that's doing deferrals to create opportunities for step-up in basis, which is tax-free someday, or we're doing planning around making sure our income's in the right spots. You mentioned, Jeff, the first one was the Roth IRA. We all understand that. Well, I just had one literally yesterday. Client came in. They weren't a client yet. And so they said, yeah, we talked to our CPA last year. He told us to move $600,000 from our IRA into our Roth because rates are going to go up. I'm like, what? A CPA told you that? First off, they're not supposed to give investment advice unless they're an investment advisor. But beside that, I was like, oh, gosh. Well, they're not going to go up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So you paid a lot of that at 32% bracket, didn't you? And they said, yeah, we did. That didn't seem right. And I said, well, We can't undo that. But gosh, I wish I'd known you a year ago, because we would have done that in a multi-year process at the 22% bracket, not at the 32% bracket. So 10% of the 600,000, that's 60 grand. I mean, just right there. I mean, it took 1 second to think, oh gosh, we made a mistake here, not getting the advice you needed. And that was from a CPA in that case. So yeah, even with something simple like Roth conversion, you can get those right and you can get those wrong.
And Brian, I think the takeaway from the conversation is that tax planning can be rather complex, but you're there to sort of break it down for most people, and they understand the Roth IRA part of that. But let's move on to the next topic here, and that is financial gifts, if you receive them.
Yeah, if you receive them, you can receive a gift, and that's not taxable to you. It can be taxable to the payer. So I was asked yesterday by a person that was in a federally taxable position. They had a big estate, and they wanted to give their daughter $400,000 to buy a house. And well, if they do that, they're going to give up some of their exemption. They have to file a gift tax return. They were going to give up, they have some of it that's tax exempt from the gift tax return, but most of it is going to reduce their lifetime exemption, and their estate will pay 40% of that under current law. It could be higher later, who knows, when they actually pass away. And so he wanted to just loan it to her and then forgive the loan over the years. But even that, you have to charge something called the applicable federal rate, a certain percentage rate for the IRS to consider that an actual loan. And even if you decide to forgive the loan payments, that is construed as constructive receipt of interest that you have to pay income taxes on. So it was very interesting computation that he's like, man, I can't even give my kid money to buy a house, and the IRS is going to get money either every year from me at my highest marginal rate or upon my death at an estate tax rate. And yeah, sorry. But we could work with that, and we were going to do a series of gifting using the applicable federal rate over years and years. A simple question. Okay, I'm going to give my kid some money. But the answer can be very complex, and not a lot of people know what I just said.
Brian, the next one has to do with inheritances. Are they always tax-free?
Generally, they are tax-free. Most people are confused on that they are inheriting some money, and I get these calls all the time. Do I got to pay tax on that? I'm like, well, no, not in most states. I mean, there's a few states that have an inheritance tax, Iowa, Kentucky, Nebraska, Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. But generally speaking, if you inherit money, you don't pay inheritance tax on that. There's no such thing. It's the estate tax. So the actual giver of the estate itself may pay tax before you receive your inheritance. But if you receive the inheritance, you don't pay tax on that unless you're inheriting an IRA account that you cash out. No one's paid tax on that yet. Or an annuity. No one's paid tax on that deferred gain yet. And so that's going to be taxed. And so there are situations where you have income tax. But the value of the money that you received as inheritance, generally in most states, is not taxable to the recipient. It can be taxable to the giver or the estate that created the inheritance in the first place. And to clarify, I mentioned if you receive certain funds like qualified funds, IRA type funds that no one's paid taxes on, you can inherit them. You're not necessarily taxed on them right away. You're taxed on it when you take the money out of the inherited IRA. So if you inherit some qualified accounts, generally you want to set up an inherited IRA account, and then you do your tax planning around that. You may have a period of time, depending on your relation to who you inherited it from, where you have to take that money out of that account and pay tax on it. So a lot of people get their inheritance and they just take the whole thing as a lump sum. And just like my Roth conversion example I started the segment out with, that can be a big mistake because you're just volunteering at the highest bracket. What if you spread that out over, say, 5 years at a lower bracket? So there are a lot of nuances to inheriting assets, even the type of asset that you're inheriting.
Brian, let's talk about life insurance proceeds, death benefits, and whether or not they're taxable.
What's interesting about life insurance is, let's say that somebody with a higher net worth has a big life insurance policy, and they're, well, I bought this because it's tax-free. And it's like, well, yeah, it's you know, the income is not taxed to your estate as income tax, but it just added to your estate value. And you'll be taxed today, you know, the estate tax rate might be 40%. And so you're like, wait a sec, 40%? That doesn't sound tax-free to me. I was sold tax-free. Well, yeah, for income tax purposes, but not for the value of the estate tax. And so it's like, oh, gosh, how do I get out of that? Can I? Absolutely. You could have bought that policy in what's called an irrevocable life insurance trust outside of your estate. So you fund that policy, and I won't get into the nuances of crummy trust letters and all this other stuff that goes into this. But you can fund a policy outside of your estate, control that, and upon death, You can't take that money back, by the way. But upon your death, that money is available income and estate tax free to, let's say, your heirs. And often it's used so they have cash to pay any estate tax for the money that is still within your estate when you pass away. So life insurance, yeah, it doesn't have an income tax effect to it generally, but it can have an estate tax effect unless you understand the nuances of how to get out of that too.
Brian, we have talked occasionally about some insurance policies in which you can draw on your future death benefits if you can't do two of six. If you do take some of those proceeds from a life insurance policy, are those taxable?
Well, what's interesting about life insurance, it can be used as a vehicle to provide cash flow, say in your retirement, that's income tax free. And it's kind of a cool thing in that if you have one of these and you have a cash value buildup, you can start borrowing against your own future death proceeds.
Right.
So you borrow money from your own life insurance policy, let's say monthly. So you've created a cash flow in your retirement years that's completely income tax free because borrowed money is not generally a taxable event.
Mm-hmm.
And then upon your death, the insurance company will pay themselves back the loan that you've been borrowing and the interest on it. And any net death proceeds, the difference, would go to your heirs income tax free. So there is a way to create tax free income during your lifetime, spending your own death benefits before you die. It's kind of a cool thing. If you qualify for it, you do have to qualify for it physically. You can't be too old, really. You don't want to buy one of these when you're 75 years old. The math doesn't work. But if you're a little bit younger and in good health, and that sounds like a good idea, that is something we use for clients, and it can be a very effective tax plan tool.
Brian, life insurance has a cost to it. Is there ever a circumstance where life insurance does not make sense because of the cost?
Absolutely. You knew that when you asked it.
Yeah, I did.
It was, you know, there are
rhetorical question, my
detriments.
Friend.
Yeah, it really was. Benefits and detriments to every single thing. That's what I love about our company here and this show, in fact, is that we talk about the benefits and the detriments. In fact, we lead with the detriments. And when we talk about any product with somebody that's looking into them, the first thing that our advisors are supposed to do is to disqualify that product. We are trying to figure out why it may not be a good idea before we even bother to spend the time as to, you know, we understand the benefits to everything that we can put somebody in, but that's not the hard part. The hard part is disqualifying and figuring out the detriments to something so that we don't even need to go down that road if it doesn't fit. So with life insurance, clearly, it's like, yeah, I really need some life insurance. Tell me about yourself. Well, I'm 75. I've had a triple bypass. I heard I could still qualify for life insurance. Well, maybe you could find a policy out there that would pay you, you know, $100,000, but it's going to cost you, you know, $25,000 a year. I'm just making this up, but it doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't qualify. Maybe you're too old for it. The cost of the insurance itself is just too high for it to make any sense. Understanding the difference between term and permanent insurance and whole life versus universal life versus variable life. I mean, you're just going, what are you talking about, Brian? You're making this too complicated. Well, it can be. And so you got to be someone that understands the nuances of life insurance. Doesn't make sense. But the first thing we're going to do, again, is try and figure out why it doesn't make sense before we figure out why it does. It can be a great tool for providing liquidity to a taxable estate outside of the estate itself. As I mentioned earlier, using the irrevocable life insurance trust, it can be a great tool for providing cash flow in your retirement while providing a death benefit in case you meet early demise. It can have lots of uses. Sometimes it can be overused. Sometimes you don't need it. Sometimes, you know, who you're insuring? You don't have any kids. Well, I don't know. I just heard you need life insurance. Well, you got $5 million, your husband and wife, and it's going to be really expensive, and you don't have any kids, and your spouse is going to be fine if one of you passes away financially. And so you don't really need life insurance. So again, there are many reasons not to buy life insurance, often related to the fees, but it can be many other things outside of the fees that make it so we don't need to address that. But a lot of people absolutely should address that, or at least ask the question and figure it out one way or the other.
Brian, this is a great conversation, but before we continue, I want to take just a moment here to remind our listeners how they can have a conversation with an advisor at Madrona to ask their questions about income sources that are not taxed. If you're looking at tax-free options and you're really looking for someone who is going to look at your situation through a comprehensive lens, I've got some good news for you. You can call 833-673-7373 right now to request your Madrona analysis, which will include a discussion about income sources that are not taxable. Now, you've got to have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify. But if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Once again, that telephone number, 833-673-7373. And again, phone lines are open right now. Take this opportunity to make that call. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. We're talking about income sources that are not taxable with Brian Evans of Madrona Financial and CPAs. Brian, let's continue this conversation by talking about annuity growth. Now, I'm talking about growth and not distributions.
Yeah, this is one of the things that if you're talking to somebody selling annuities, you got to be careful because they'll say, your annuity is tax deferred. And a lot of people hear tax deferred and they go, oh, that sounds like a really good thing. I don't have to pay tax on that, right? No, deferral means putting it off. It doesn't mean tax-free. Tax-free and tax-deferred are two very, very different things. And so with annuities, yeah, you're putting it off, but you're just putting it off into a different year. Or if you pass away with it, it is not subject to the step-up in basis. So someone is going to pay taxes on that gain at their rate if they inherit it. And so sometimes a deferral is a bad thing, actually. That's the interesting thing about tax planning. You think, you hear the word tax-deferred, always good, right? I'm like, nope, benefits and detriments. You know, when I was a young man and I'm working and putting money into my 401k, that was tax deferred. I get to grow it and I don't pay tax on the growth until I take it out. Unfortunately, I deferred it when I was in the 10% bracket right out of college. I wasn't making a lot of money. I was making less than 20 grand a year. Summa cum laude from university 100 years ago. You know, I was in a low bracket. When I pay it back someday, I'm going to pay it back at the highest bracket. I'm thinking to myself, oh, that tax deferral didn't work in my favor. I got a 10% benefit. It grew. And now I'm going to pay it back at 40% or whatever the top tax bracket is. That's a bummer. So sometimes tax deferral isn't a good thing. So annuity growth is tax deferred. And sometimes it's a good thing. Maybe your tax brackets are lower in retirement when you take that money out or to heirs that inherited it. But it depends. It's a person-by-person analysis as to whether that makes sense, deferring growth within an annuity.
Brian, for those folks who do have long-term care insurance policies, if they do get proceeds from that, are they going to be taxable?
Yeah, in all these situations, I do want to preface that I'm talking in general terms. Do not rely on this. I don't know you for your own income tax planning. We talked about Roth income. Yeah, that's tax-free, but gifts that you receive generally are tax-free, but sometimes they are taxable. Inheritances, life insurance proceeds. Well, you could have a life insurance plan. You gut it. You take all the cash surrender value. All of a sudden, it becomes taxable. Oh, I didn't mention that. Or I mentioned earlier that you think you have a tax-free life insurance policy. It's in your estate, and your estate pays 40% on it. Doesn't sound tax-free anymore, does it? And so long-term care is also, generally speaking, that can be tax-free on long-term care, but there are nuances that that's not the case. So understand that everything I'm talking about is in very, very 40,000-foot view terms. It may be different for your situation, so definitely have that conversation with CPA.
Brian, some people have disability benefits, and I know that they may get them from the military, they may get them from Social Security. Are disability benefits non-taxable?
Same thing as the long-term care kind of situation. Yeah, generally, you can have tax-free disability benefits, but there's always exceptions to the rule. That's the one thing I learned getting through university and becoming a CPA is just when you think you got something figured out, now here's the 12 pages for the exceptions to the rule you just read. I'm like, no wonder this tax,
I know.
You know, the tax code is only a couple thousand pages, but why is there 100,000 pages of regulations, interpretations, court cases, because all the nuances, all the gray area. Most of the tax code is pretty gray. Stuff we deal with is not black or white. They just, you know, have to be a million words probably to make it more black and white. So there's a lot of nuances, interpretations, and so forth like that. So, yeah, it gets a little cloudy sometimes. But generally speaking, yeah, disability benefits would be tax-free. And Jeff, you mentioned military disability. I did want to comment on that. We do a lot of stuff here at Madrona. That's not something we specialize in. But I did want to mention that if you are a veteran, that you want to find somebody that specializes in that and have a talk with them. You may feel fine. You may feel like you don't have a disability, but you may qualify for disability benefits. And, you know, everybody's term of disability is different. My brother was in the Marines for 20 years, and he could have a screw poking out of his knee. He said, I'm fine. I'll just rub some dirt in it.
You know, he's a Marine.
Like there's ever anything wrong with him.
Yeah.
But he's limping around going, well, I don't know about that. You know, you're not moving around like you used to. Well, you carry a 120-pound pack up a hill every day, you know, for all these days. He's a Marine and all that, MP trainer. And, you know, he went through some tough stuff. You know, I just want to point that out. If you're a veteran, definitely talk to somebody that specializes in that. There may be some benefits on the table for you.
Brian, let's talk about municipal bond interest and whether or not that's taxable.
Yeah, municipal bond interest is tax-free. I got a story on that. I had a client that was a tax client only before I was a financial advisor, in fact. And I'm looking at the tax return, picked it up for the first year, and I was like, wow, you have a lot of municipal bond interest. She says, yeah, we don't want to pay taxes. I'm like, but you have own a horse farm that loses tons of money, and you have negative taxable income every year. And so I called the advisor, and I said, yeah, you're all in municipal bonds. Yeah, we got to keep her out of the taxes because, she, you know, we don't want to pay 40%. I said, well, have you looked at her tax return? He goes, oh, well, no. Why should I? I said, well, actually, she has a six-figure net operating loss carry forward and an annual net operating loss of six figures adding to that. She'll never have any taxable income in her lifetime. He was like, oh. And so it was kind of a oops moment. I tried to be nice about it, but gee, he hadn't even asked for the tax return. He was doing tax planning. And so sometimes, okay, tax-free sounds great, but what was the cost? The cost in this case is municipal bonds weren't paying very well at the time. They were paying way less than taxable bonds. The taxation on a taxable bond when you're in the 0% bracket is zero. And so there was just connecting the dots between the tax planning and the investment advisory was so important in that case. But yeah, municipal bond interest can be tax-free. Depending on the state you're in, that can matter. Maybe you're in a state that doesn't have income tax, and it's just not as attractive, or the interest rate that they're paying just isn't as good. So be careful about just, you know, being sold something. Oh, it's tax-free. It must be good. Not always. Sometimes it's not a good idea.
Brian, a little short on time, but I do want to include in this conversation about income sources that are not taxable by talking about capital gains, but those that are not properly offset.
Yeah, there's the offset of capital gains against capital losses. There's the ability to manage your investments to create capital gain situations. Some people think capital gains is bad. No, that's a good thing. If you're going to pay tax, capital gains rates are lower than ordinary income tax rates. And then you can get into nuances, like if you own investment real estate, yeah, I'm going to pay capital gains at a little bit lower rate on this, right? Well, you've got some depreciation recapture. You might be at the 15% bracket, 23.8%, or you might decide to do a Section 1031 exchange, defer. Remember, I talked about tax deferral for a period of time and eventually get tax-free treatment through the step-up in basis. So again, even with capital gains discussions, there's a lot of nuances there that can be addressed to either potentially get it tax-free or at a potentially lower rate.
Brian, I'm sure that our listeners may have some questions about tax-free income. If you're looking for some tax-free options and you're looking for someone who is going to take a look at your situation through a comprehensive lens, once again, I invite you to call 833-673-7373 and request your Madrona analysis. You must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify. But if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Once again, that telephone number, 833-673-7373. Brian, out of time for this week. I want to thank you for your time, but most of all, certainly I want to thank our great listeners for joining us. For Brian Evans, I'm Jeff Shade. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week right here with another edition of Growing Your Wealth.
No statements made during the Growing Your Wealth show should constitute tax, legal, or accounting advice. You should consult your own legal or tax professional on your own individual information. Brian Evans and Madrona Financial Services is licensed to offer investment advisory services through Madrona Financial Services, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Insurance products are offered through Madrona Insurance Services, LLC, a licensed insurance agency and an affiliate of Madrona Financial Services. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investors cannot invest directly into indexes. No investment strategy, including asset allocation and diversification, guarantees a profit or guarantees the avoidance of loss. Financial planning is an important tool that does not guarantee specific outcomes. DST investments are only available to accredited investors and offered solely through the issuer's offering documents. The DST sponsor determines whether to accept any individual subscription documents. Madrona Financial and CPAs is a registered trade name used singly and collectively for the affiliate entities. Madrona Financial Services, LLC, Madrona and Bauer Evans, Inc., PC. Bauer Evans. Investment advisory services are provided through Madrona. CPA services are provided through Bauer Evans.